Good morning. Have a blessed Thanksgiving. It's right around the corner. I don't know how familiar you are with raising chickens in the 1960s, but I'm going to talk about chicken house in the 1960s. Different ways to raise chickens. This is just one way. There were cages installed hanging from the ceiling, and each chicken had a little space, and the water was in, I think, the middle between the cages, and then feed was on the outside. When they'd lay an egg, it would roll out on a little shelf, and you'd walk through and pick up the eggs. It's not too pleasant an environment. When we lived in Watertown, New York, we bought our eggs from a lady who was a school teacher, and when we went to pick up the eggs, we'd visit with the chickens. They'd come out, they were all over the yard and everything. And then when we moved down to the Mechanicsburg area, we met a Mennonite farmer who had eggs. We bought eggs from him. And he said, well, you'll have to, we told him about the Watertown chickens, and said, you'll have to come out and visit your chickens at my farm. So when we went out to pick up the eggs, the chickens were running around. Now, the point of the story of the chickens in cages is that there are people today, maybe people who are listening to me, who feel like they're living in a cage and they're trapped. Now, one of the things that was done to fool the chickens is the lighting system was calibrated to give the chicken the idea that it's daylight and it produces more eggs. And with the technology that we live with, we have the sensation that we're living in a 24/7, 365-day-a-year cage. And we're always pushed to produce more and more. We're going to talk more about that chicken house and maybe getting out of it. Thanksgiving is a time for self-examination. When you talk about giving thanks, you would say, well, now, what am I going to give thanks for? And when you ask that question of yourself, you have to think like, well, what am I thankful for? What are the things that are working in my life and I have gratitude for? What are the things that are not working? Or what are the things I regret? So Thanksgiving kind of automatically is a time to think about our lives, where we've been in the last year, and where we're headed in the year to come. So it's a period of examination. The Bible has a lot to say about Thanksgiving. For example, as you read through the book of Psalms or you read through the letters of the Apostle Paul, there are passages that give praise to God for different things. And the Bible has a lot to say about our use of time and the way we live, or our lifestyle, the way we conduct ourselves. In the book of Ephesians, in chapter 5, verses 16 and 17, it talks about us redeeming the time. Another way of describing redeeming the time, it would be make the most of the time. Make the most of every opportunity. Or be wise in the use of our time. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, the Apostle Paul talks about us living a life that is quiet and peaceable. Now, every now and then I refer to my friend Bob, who I worked with for years, who when he heard something that was kind of crazy. He would twist his face up, and his vocal cords must have been tightening, and he'd say something like, "What?" Well, if I was talking to Bob about living a tranquil and quiet life, I think he'd say, "What? What are you talking about?" To even think about a tranquil and quiet life in our day and age is kind of, what are you talking about? We live in a 24/7 culture. Everything is full tilt all the time in many circles. When I talk about making a day special, like a Thanksgiving Day, or next week when we start our Advent series of talking about special days in Advent, some people think of the passage in Galatians chapter 4, verse 10, where it talks about the people were observing days and seasons, special things. This is a put down. This is not a put down on special days. This is a put down on people who are going back into pagan culture and pagan habits of doing things that were related to pagan religions. It's not discrediting having a day of Thanksgiving or the Lord's Day when we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus or anything like that. So cover the objection before the objection's even made. Written into the nature of time are three lessons. And I want to talk about those three lessons that have a bearing on Thanksgiving and the Thanksgiving season. The first of those lessons is change is integral to life. Change is part of life. If you don't like what's going on, wait a little bit. Things are going to change. If you do like what's going on, don't get your heart set on it because it's probably going to change too. Change is just everywhere. Thanksgiving pictures change. And I want to talk a little bit about my growing up years and of my memories of Thanksgiving in the past. And I'm going to talk about the value of traditions. So let me just get off to the side and say, I read a book one time written by a guy who was Italian. And he talked about what it was like to grow up as an Italian and the certain traditions that they had in their family. He talked about how they cooked. He talked about how they ate together. He talked about all kinds of things that happened in his Italian culture that he thought and thinks are good. They give stability and direction and a healthy predictability about where life is going. So tradition is a good thing. I'm not talking about empty tradition or meaningless tradition or mindless tradition. I'm talking about people who really embrace what's going on and are nurtured by the traditions. My father worked in the railroad all his life. He was born in 1902 and he died in 1987. He worked in the railroad all his life. He always wanted to be a farmer, but he was a railroader. And so he made friends with people who were railroaders who farmed on the side. They had a side hustle. And so as a child, I was taken to all kinds of farms in Perry County to help them with different tasks. One day, we went to a guy's farm who farmed with horses, and I was just a little kid. He put me up in the wagon, gave me the reins of the horses, and I thought I was driving a team of horses. What was really going on was he was walking in the field, picking up things, and he was talking to the horses. He was telling them what to do. I was just holding these reins. I had absolutely nothing to do with it. I didn't figure that out till later. The joke was on me. But I thought I was driving a team of horses. We went to the same guy's farm, and butchered hogs. And they would set me up at the end of the meat plank on a bench and give me a pile of fat to cut up for lard, Well, you give a little kid a big butcher knife, this is just the greatest life you could have. And I'm sitting there cutting up this lard and putting it in the kettle, and it's rendered down, you end up with lard. It was just great. My dad always wanted to be a farmer. He was never a farmer, but he got in these things that were going on the side. Now, when my sister, my first sister, who was 22 years older than me, when she married a farmer, she couldn't have married a better guy. If she'd have married a millionaire, had 10 million, wouldn't count. But she married a farmer, big deal. And my dad vicariously lived out his farming interest by going to the farm in York Springs. That's what the York Springs is about. York Springs is somewhere between Harrisburg and Gettysburg, not far from Dillsburg, if you're aware of the different geography down there. Anyway, we'd go over the farm a lot, but on Thanksgiving Day was always a day at the farm, and we usually went over on every Saturday when I was growing up. When my dad retired, he went over more frequently, but Thanksgiving Day was a special day on the farm. I had a farming sister and a society sister. My brother, who was 18 years older than me, referred to my second sister as a society sister. She worked in an office. I guess that's what that comes from. So my farming sister, my society sister, my parents, we were all there, and with the children involved, and we had a Thanksgiving dinner. In the morning, my brother-in-law would put me on a tractor and tell me which way to turn the wheels so that we could put any farm equipment that was outside inside. It drives me crazy when I drive around northwestern PA and I see all this farm equipment sitting outside. This is not the way I was raised. I just can't believe that you'd have this expensive equipment sitting outside. When I was hauling oil before we moved up here in 2020, my oil truck was kept inside overnight. So that when I got in it, it was like 50 degrees. It could be 10 outside or zero, but it was in this garage. Anyway, I never understood buying expensive equipment and parking it outside. So that morning, any equipment that was still out, after all the crops had been picked, it was put away. And he'd tell me which way to turn the wheels to get the thing in right. And everything was really close. They didn't have a lot of space to deal with. So Thanksgiving Day was a happy, happy day of memories of family and different kinds of food, and it was just a great experience. But it was a time that you were celebrating change. The equipment was put away. The fields were just fields, just dirt. The leaves were off the trees. It seemed to be darker, longer periods of time. Everything was changing, and Thanksgiving is a time of change. The Bible talks about change taking place in a very predictable way. This passage of scripture in Deuteronomy 6 talks about the children of Israel when they were going into the promised land. And God is telling them ahead of time, you know, when you get into this new land, you're going to be tempted to pick up the pagan practices of the people you're living around. You're going to be tempted for this. You're going to be tempted for that. You're going to be tempted to forget the ways of God. You're going to be tempted to forget the things that have been done for you and getting out of, you know, all these kinds of things. You're going to face change. So the scriptures talk about the reality of change. In the Genesis account, it talks about how we have seasons and we have periods of time where things are dormant and periods of time when things are growing. The Bible talks about change. We experience change. When I was growing up, just like when you were growing up, there were times you could do things, and then there were times you couldn't do things. And you had life experiences. There was maybe a time when you were given the keys to the house. At a certain age when you didn't have keys to the house, you get keys to the house. Then maybe you were given keys to the car, or you were given access to the car, all these things. We date, we have a marriage, we have career changes, we have children, we have promotions or demotions. We lose a job or we get a job. we have retirement, we have hobbies, we have grandchildren, all these things. Life is just made up of change. One of the companies where I pick up freight and take it down to Freedom, a lady 4 months ago or so took a medical leave. And earlier in November, she passed away at the age of 66. When her family gets together for Thanksgiving, it's going to be different. And I remember when my folks were getting older and we had this time at York Springs, and it was just really great. And I was thinking, you know, my mom and dad are in their 80s now. The time will come at Thanksgiving when mom isn't there or dad isn't there. This is the way life is. Change comes, and we don't have a vote on this. These are things that come our way. They're just part of life. We experience change. We need to make the most of change. One is we need to expect it. So I handle the obituaries for my high school class. And out of a class of 152, there are 54 people listed on my obituary list. And our class has decided that we want all the class members to know when these things happen. And so I'm the one who's tasked to do that. We expect change, and we plan for change. I will not always be living in a house in Spartansburg. I will not always be able to do this or to do that or whatever. We need to expect change, and not to be pessimistic, but to be realistic about planning for change. The reason we moved to Spartansburg in 2020 is I knew that I could not keep working the way I was working, hauling oil and water, and preaching at the Chinese church on Sundays. That I used to tell my banker when I go into cash checks, he'd say, how are things? And I said, the worse the weather, the better business. And he'd look at me like, what? The worse the weather, the better business. What? Well, the colder it got, the more oil we hauled. And the hotter it got in the summer, the more water we hauled for swimming pools. So the worse the weather, the better business. I knew I couldn't keep living that way. From 2003 to 2020, that was a way of life. I knew, so something had to change. So we moved near my wife's family, and I work less now. Still work, but I work less. It's more humane. So we need to make the most change. Expect it. It'll happen. And make some plans for what we can control. Can't control everything, but what we can, we make decisions about. Rest is integral to life. Just like change is part of life, rest is. And the Thanksgiving gives us a picture of rest. Like the ground and the trees. When you look out in the fields, when I drive down here this morning, you look out in the fields are barren. There's still some place we're catching up picking corn. They're still picking corn up in Spartansburg. I don't know why things are so late, but they are. There's probably a reason why this is happening. But anyway, for the most part, the fields are barren. The leaves are off the trees. There's shorter daylight periods of time. It gets dark like 4:30. It's like up in Sparty, things are starting to get ready to sleep. And it's darker sooner. And the morning you get up, it's dark. So the Thanksgiving period of time, where we celebrate Thanksgiving as a national event, rest is kicking in. The Bible talks about giving a picture of rest. The creation account, where it says God created on these different days and then he rested. Now, he rested not because he was tired, but he rested because it was the end of the production of the created order. The Sabbath was instituted as a day of rest for the people of God. In 1 Kings 19, there's a story of Elijah. Elijah basically worked himself into fatigue and depression. I'm not going to read the story, but he wore himself out. And there's a lesson in that. If we don't rest, we wear ourselves out. I looked for a book yesterday. I wanted to be able to hold it up and show it to you. But what I tell you is true. Even though I couldn't find the book, I know I have it somewhere. My doctoral dissertation is on biblical concepts of time. And in the course of that, I came across a book called Fatigue in Modern Society. Fatigue in Modern Society. You know when that book was written? It was written in the 1950s. Now, I'll just round it off to 1950. That 75 years ago, people were saying, hey, we're living in a modern society and everybody's tired. People are worn out. Well, if it was true then, it certainly is true now, because we live in this 24/7, 365 days a year culture. I've told some businessmen in Spartansburg, like Bova's Hardware Store closes at, I think, 6 o'clock at night, and it closes at noon on Saturday. And the guy who owns it takes a day off a week, and his employees don't work from early morning till late night. And I told him, I said, John, I admire the way you pace yourself, and the hardware store doesn't need to be open all night. Now, if some businesses choose to do that, that's fine, but I think he's running his business in a smart way, and he has happy, well-rested people who do the work. Anyway, if we don't respect these lessons about the use of time and the need for rest, we're kidding ourselves. We need to rest. We need to plan when we rest. We need to set limits. When our children were young, we had 2 sons and 6 grandsons. When our children were young, my wife and I agreed how many nights we could be away from home. We were not out 7 nights a week. And we made our plan and we tried to respect it, so that our children were rested and we were rested. Set limits of how much I'll work and how much I'll rest. There's a question about who's responsible for this way of thinking or this way of living. In Genesis, this is in the Bible, I'm not pulling your leg. In Genesis 3:16, it says that the desire of the wife will be toward her husband, and he will rule over you. Now, when people hear that word rule, they kind of bristle. Husband ruling over a wife. The word that's translated rule is the same word that's used to describe how the sun rules the day and the moon rules the night. The sun rules the day and provides an environment for growth and development. And the moon rules the night to provide rest for the earth. It isn't sun all the time. It's sun and moon. Rest and growth. So a husband is responsible to make sure his wife has adequate rest and adequate opportunities for growth and development. There are many times I've told, I didn't want to put this in a slide, somebody take a picture of it and go ballistic. There are many times I've told men whose wives were just worn out, tired, I'd say to them, you know, if you treated your wife as good as a farmer who farms with horses treats his horses, your wife would be a lot better. treat her like a horse. What are you talking about? Well, a farmer who mistreats his horses is looked down on in a well-informed society. He not only works the horses, he rests the horses. They're cared for. And husbands are people who have some responsibility for caring for the rest and the growth of their wife and the development of their lives. The question is, who keeps the husband honest? And the answer is, my wife does. We have to work together on this. And so, if I'm doing something that isn't nurturing, isn't healthy for me, isn't productive for me, isn't productive for her, isn't nurturing for her, then something has to change. And we make the adjustments. Do you ever violate this? Yeah. I can't control emergency situations, but everything isn't an emergency. I worked, when we hauled oil and water, there was a statement we used in our office frequently. Poor planning on your part is not an emergency for me. Poor planning on your part is not an emergency for me. If you bought a liner for swimming, if you reline pools, if you bought a liner for a pool, and you didn't order water until the day you put that liner in, you're not getting water. We're not working 24/7 to do this. You need to plan ahead. So poor planning on your part is not an emergency for me. So anyway, this whole thing of we need to think about time, we need to think about planning, of setting limits on it. Now, what about single people? Either people who aren't married, or they're widowers, or they're a widow. I think people need to have friends who keep an eye on them, who check up on them. Like, how are you doing? You know, you're working too much. You're doing too much of this kind of stuff. You ought to dial it back. I appreciate the friendship I have with people who, if I'm overrunning my lights and what I'm doing, they'll call it to my attention. That's what caring for people, that's what loving people is about. So we need some kind of a network where we're checking on people, making sure they're taking care of themselves and doing what they're supposed to. I have a sister who's 100 years old, and I was very careful when we lived in the Harrisburg area not to interfere with her life, but her son and her daughter were keeping an eye on her, and I was keeping an eye on her too. But we were just keeping an eye on her, making sure that she was really doing well, and we didn't tell her what to do. She figured it out on her own. If you've lasted 100 years and she's lasted and done very, very well for herself, she knows what's going on. And so there are times when she would say, you know, Arthur, I'm not going to do that anymore. I say, that's good, sis. That's a good decision. So there ought to be a way for us to keep track of how we're using our time and that we're getting adequate rest. So change is part of life and rest is part of life. So celebration part of life. Celebration is integral to life. Thanksgiving is a time of celebration. Our American culture celebrates the goodness of God for his loving care over our nation and over our people. There are pictures and books and songs, all kinds of stuff related to Thanksgiving themes. And sometimes there's such a rush to Christmas that Thanksgiving is forgotten. But as a pastor, I've always emphasized the different holidays throughout the year. Because just like in September we have Labor Day, the Bible has something to say about work and labor. And just like in October we have days like Reformation Sunday. The church needs to know something about the Reformation, the Protestant Reformation, and that the authority of Scripture and saved by faith are important things. In November, we talk about the Veterans Day, and we appreciate the contribution veterans have made to our nation, and Thanksgiving. So I've remembered these holidays. Our nation remembers these things. In your hymnal, I think it's 578, there's a hymn called Now Thank We All Our God. A man named Martin Rinkert wrote that song. The number after his name, I'll explain. He was in Germany, and he lived in the 1600s. He was in Germany. He wrote this song. A plague went through his town, and he was the only pastor left alive in that town. And there are records that he conducted on some days 40 to 50 funerals. That's 40 and 50 funerals. Death was everywhere. His town had been attacked by foreign enemies a number of times. This is a man who really knew suffering and pain and difficulty. And he wrote this beautiful hymn that I'm going to read at our conclusion. Now thank we all our God with heart and hand and voices. I'll read the whole thing in a bit. So Thanksgiving is a time of celebration, not because life is easy, but because God is faithful even in difficult times. The Bible talks about celebration. All throughout the Psalms, there are Psalms written in praise to God for who He is and what He's done. In our music this morning, we sang about praise to God and blessing the Lord, O my soul. The Psalms talk about it. In Ephesians chapter 1, verse 3, Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who's blessed us with all spiritual blessing in heavenly places in Christ. All through the Scriptures, God is blessed and praised for His goodness. So the Scriptures talk about celebrating. We can celebrate, but if we're going to celebrate, I'm going to suggest three things we have to do. One is, we need to focus on certain things. The passage in Philippians says, if there's anything virtuous, if there's anything good, if there's anything noble, if there's anything, all these wonderful virtues, we need to focus on the things that are true and permanent about God and about life. Holy things have a focus in our life. We need a filter. Proverbs 4:23, guard your heart with all diligence. Out of it flow the issues of life. Just like you put oil filters in cars to get the dirt out of the oil and keep the oil clean and pure so it does what it's supposed to do, our lives need filters. Filters on our ears, filters on our eyes. I don't read everything. I don't listen to everything. I don't see everything. There are things that don't belong in my life, so I need to get them out of my life. And we need to formulate things. Proverbs 3:27. Do not withhold good from those who deserve it if it's in your power to act. God deserves our praise. I can give Him the glory that's due His name. When people do nice things, I thank them. Do not withhold good from those who deserve it if it's in your power to give it. I thank the people who help me do the work that I do. When I get loaded, there's a guy who helps me load or who loads. I help him. I thank him for what he's doing. Gratitude is often, we sang about that too this morning. That's good. Gratitude is something that's missing in our culture. This attitude that I deserve everything and all you're doing is what you're supposed to do, that's not a good thing. We need to thank people for what they do. So we can celebrate. Every sermon should have three things. It should have something to know. And what I know is that Thanksgiving is a time to embrace change and rest and celebration. Thursday, when we gather, whoever we gather with, whatever we do, it's a time to observe the change, embrace the rest, and celebrate the goodness of God in His care for our lives. Every sermon should have something to believe, and what I believe is that Thanksgiving is a sacred season. I believe it's a sacred season because the Scriptures talk about giving thanks to God. Just because it's a national holiday doesn't mean it's not sacred any more than 4th of July, Independence Day, Memorial Day, all those things. Those are sacred opportunities for us to give praise to God for His goodness to us as a people. I believe that. Every sermon should have something to do, and what I do is I testify to the faithfulness of God to me. And to do that, I want to read. Before I read this, I have a little note here to myself. I want to thank the 49ers for the nice fruit basket. That was very kind of you to do that. I was sent home with a nice basket of fruit last week, and we've enjoyed it. There's still good fruit left for that. It wouldn't be right for me to talk about gratitude and not thank you for that. That was great. Thank you very much. Now, the man who had this marvelous ministry among suffering people wrote the hymn that's found on 578. Now thank we all our God with heart and hands and voices, who wondrous things has done, in whom this world rejoices, who from our mother's arms has blessed us on our way with countless gifts of love and still is ours today. Oh, may this bounteous God through all our life be near us with ever joyful hearts and blessed peace to cheer us. And keep us in his grace and guide us when perplexed. Are you ever perplexed? He guides us when we're perplexed. And free us from all ills in this world and the next. All praise and thanks to God, the Father now be given, the Son and Him who reigns with them in highest heaven. The one eternal God, whom earth and heaven adore, thus it was, is now, and evermore shall be. Amen. We're going to sing and then we'll have the benediction.